don't know much about sheep at all, other than just what I've read. I haven't been around them very much. But I understand what we can gather just from the plain scriptures lets us know that sheep need help. They need leadership. They need to be guided. They need to be shown where to go. And they get lost. They wander away. They need a leader. And in our culture, if someone calls someone a sheep, is that a good thing? That's usually a bad thing, right? That's sort of a put down. Don't be sheep. It seems like that's kind of a relatively new thing to me. I mean, I've heard it a lot, you know, lately, the people talk about the bad thing about being a sheep, and that's sort of a, you know, nobody should be a sheep, and you ought to, the idea is you should think for yourself, and you ought to, don't just follow, don't go where people lead you, you know, but, so people put down being a sheep, and yet here's David. I don't know for sure when he wrote this, if he was king already, but a man who would be king, if not king already, gladly owning the title of a sheep, gladly putting himself in that picture, in his comparison to the Lord, who he owns as his shepherd. And if you read about sheep, people will say they're not very bright. And I have found people that will come to their defense and say they've been kind of maligned. But I'll say this, I think sheep are probably smarter than most people because they know to follow the shepherd. And I think people, very often like sheep without a shepherd, don't have the sense to know they need to be led and feel like, you know, I'm just fine. I don't need any help. I don't need anybody to tell me what to do. I want to figure this out on my own. And we take great pride in that. That's not necessarily a good thing. In fact, it's a terrible thing. It is not a man that walks to direct his steps. We think we can do all that, but we need help. And owning the fact that we are sheep who need a shepherd is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. David was not too proud to say, the Lord's my shepherd. And he recognized that. God's relationship with his people is often compared to a shepherd. Psalm 80, verse 1 says, "Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock." The shepherd would lead the sheep to where they need to go, where there's food, where there's grass and water, as we'll see, of course, in the psalm. And the shepherd would protect the flock. Jesus talks about the shepherd laying down his life for his sheep and protecting them against those who would steal and kill and destroy, from the wolves, from danger to the flock. And so God is that protector and leader and guider of his flock. What's interesting about this particular psalm compared to Psalm 80, verse 1, where the Lord is the shepherd of Israel. And so you often think of a shepherd with a flock. And so you picture, in fact, a lot of the pictures, if you find a picture of a shepherd, it's almost always a man with a lot of sheep. And that's sort of the definition of a shepherd. And yet in this psalm, David says, "The Lord is my shepherd." Not the Lord is our shepherd. I'm sure he would affirm that the Lord is our shepherd. The Lord is the shepherd of Israel. But he's thinking, it seems apparent to me as you read through this, it's spoken in a very personal way. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He leads me beside the still waters, makes me lie down in green grass. I will not fear. You know, he's talking about his personal relationship. And that's a neat thing, especially in the context of Israel, which we often think of God's relationship with Israel on a very group-type level. But David had a personal relationship with the Lord that he writes about and sings about and praises God. And that's encouraging. And I think that's something that we can all take from this as well. So he says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Clearly the idea of that is, the most obvious meaning is, I will not be in need. I won't want for something. But it also, wouldn't you agree, seems to convey the idea that I will be content with what the Lord gives me. That it's a statement that is of confidence and trust. That because he is following the Lord, because he's like a sheep following the Lord, that the Lord's going to give him what he needs, and he's going to accept what the Lord gives him, and so he won't want, he won't be in need, and he will be content with that. In verse 2, it says, "He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters." I was trying to think, what more would a sheep need? That's pretty much it, right? You've got green pastures, so there's, you know, and still waters. Just the idea of it sounds serene, doesn't it? It sounds calm. It sounds safe. And it sounds like he's got what he needs. He's got the food. He's got this, you know, the sustenance that he needs. He's got water to drink. That's the shepherd's job, is to lead sheep into places like that. And so what's interesting to think about that is that if you think about David's life, it wasn't always peaceful. In fact, if you just survey his life in your mind, you might think it was more often than not peaceful. He was very often on the run, for the early part of his life, running from Saul, and then later in life, sadly, tragically, running from his own son, Absalom. And there was a lot of turmoil in David's life. And you might think, well, maybe this was written when he was young and everything was great. But I think this would be true throughout his life, except for those times when he was out of sync with God, when he turned away from God in his sin with Bathsheba and all that. He wouldn't have been able to say this psalm then. But otherwise, when he was putting his trust in God, I think he would have said this was still true. And so how does God lead him in green pastures beside still waters, even when perhaps on the outside it would appear that his life was in turmoil? And I would suggest to you, this is something that's true about us and our relationship with the Lord as well. That when we're told, for example, in Galatians 5, that the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace, those things are not dependent on circumstances. Those things are not dependent on the what's going on. That's a deep inner kind of thing. The peace that we have, the joy that we have, that we share through our relationship with the Lord is a spiritual kind of thing and a spiritual kind of peace. And thankfully, that's a peace that, as we're told, passes understanding. It's a peace that we can enjoy even when things maybe are out of kilter, things are kind of crazy. And at times like this, isn't it great to know that we can still say, can we not, that the Lord leads us in green pastures and makes us lie down in green pastures and leads us beside still waters, even when the world might seem to be kind of crazy. The next phrase seems to confirm this when he says, he restores my soul, he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. What's being refreshed and restored in this is his soul. And this idea of being restored makes me wonder if he's thinking about a sheep that perhaps has wandered off and needs to be brought back. And David could tell you stories about that. And in fact, we all could. We could all talk about that. We could all share stories of when we wandered away and had to be brought back. Sheep often need to be brought back and led back into paths of righteousness. Some animals are good at navigating themselves. And that's always fascinating to me. I don't understand how they do that. Something that doesn't have any more intelligence than a butterfly can find its way around the globe. It's incredible. Birds, and we if you want to make fun of somebody, you call them having a bird brain. But which of us could navigate without my phone? I wouldn't be able to get here probably without, even though I've been here several times. But birds can go to the same place. They can navigate. Cats, unfortunately, right, can find their way back. If you've ever, I like cats, but I know that they have that ability. And I just saw on the news this week, this was a story this week, a dog from, it was missing in Kansas. To be honest, you might have seen this in the news. It just made the headlines this week. It was missing for a while, so the people were like looking for the dog, didn't know what happened to it, and it showed up at its old home where they had moved away, 50 miles away. The family had moved, and the dog somehow got lost. Nobody knows how, but instead of going to the new house, the dog went to the house it was familiar with, which was 50 miles and across a river away, and nobody knows how. They don't know how it got there. It just showed up, and the people at the old that had bought the house saw this dog, and it was afraid of them, but they finally got its tag or chip or whatever, and they figured out it belonged to the people they bought the house from who had moved 50. So anyway, dogs can do all that, but guess what can't do that for the most part? They're sheep. Sheep, they wander off, and they don't come back. They don't find their way home like the dog or that cat or the butterflies. But they wander off, and they're lost, and that's why even Jesus, of course, talks about Which if you're having nine sheep and one's gone, you're going to leave those, and you don't just say, well, he'll be back. You know, you don't just say, well, he'll find his way. You have to go find him. When I was a kid, this painting, I mean, you've probably seen this before. It's one of those paintings you would see. I don't know where it came from, but we had this print of it, and it was hanging over my bed in my room. And I don't even remember how it got to be there. I don't remember if that was something mom or dad picked out or if I just liked it. I don't remember how, but I just grew up with this hanging over the bed. And so I spent a lot of time laying there looking at it and thinking about it and trying to imagine what the scenario was here. Pretty clearly, the collie has found the sheep and is calling for the shepherd. And that's, I think, some versions of it I saw call it the shepherd's call. The Bible doesn't talk much about sheepdogs like we think of in the same way, but the idea is that sheep get lost, they wander off, and you have to go find them. And we, too, wander away. In fact, Isaiah says we're all like sheep in this way. Everybody can relate to that. We've all got lost somewhere along the way. We've all turned aside to our own way. And without a shepherd, here's the thing, without a shepherd, we're hopelessly lost. We have to have the shepherd. We have to have that relationship with the shepherd. Of course, walking in the paths of righteousness are not always easy. Verse 4 says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. So the picture changes here. New scene. Before, it was green pastures, still waters. I picture, it's hard to even say those words without picturing a sunny day, and it's nice out, and it's calm. But something now is different. The sheep is now following the shepherd, but the shepherd is leading him into a dark place, a valley, a shaded valley, a valley of the shadow of death. What would that be? Well, immediately you say the word death, and we immediately think of dying, of course. So at the very most literal understanding of it, it would be someone who is either in the throes of death or approaching death or facing possible death. But I think if we broaden it out a little bit, of course, it could just be any circumstance that's frightening, where we feel threatened, where we feel unsure, and it seems scary, perhaps. But instead, he says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Notice that whereas it says he makes me lie down in green pastures, here it says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. It's not a destination. The valley of the shadow of death is a place along the way that you have to pass through. It's part of the journey, but it's not where you're going to stay. The shepherd doesn't bring the sheep to the valley of the shadow of death and leave them there. The shepherd leads the sheep through this valley. And we might wonder, well, why? And we would trust that the second song we sang so beautifully, that one of the verses says, though the way is thorny, he leads us to a better place. I can't remember the exact wording of it, but it's like he might lead us through a path that's difficult or that's even painful or that might be shaded with the threat of death, but that it's on our way to somewhere else. So the sheep is following the shepherd in through this valley, but through the valley and on to something hopefully, and we would trust better and more sunny and more peaceful on the other side. And along the way, he says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? For you are with me. He knows the shepherd is with him. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I believe Paul would say it like this. What shall we say to all these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? I mean, when you know that, and when you consider the context that Romans 8:31, shall nakedness or peril or sword or any of these things. You know, you just, what can the world throw at you? What can man do to me? If you know the shepherd, if you have your faith in God, then whatever that valley is and whatever it involves and whatever you have to go through, if the shepherd is with you, then who can be against us? And how does David know that the shepherd is with him? I think this is an interesting part of this. He says, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. The shepherd's rod and staff were the tools of his trade, and they would be used to guide the sheep, perhaps, to kind of steer them where they're supposed to go, not to not to drive them like you would perhaps drive cattle, but to guide the sheep. They would also be used as a defensive weapon against any kind of animal that would maybe threaten the sheep. And apparently they were used for counting sheep. I don't know if you ever noticed this kind of obscure little verse in the old law. In Leviticus, we're told, at the tithe of herds and flocks, every tenth animal of all that pass under the herdsman's staff shall be holy to the Lord. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The tenth one and then the next tenth one. But anyway, it makes it sound like he would just, as they would pass along, he's probably counting them. And that may be how you would know if you had 99. If you had 101 was not there, you go 98, 99. Uh-oh, I'll be back. Somebody's not here. And but anyway, so that they, you can see they would use this rod and staff. It's just part of their trade. But what's interesting about that to me is that he, in David, in describing himself as this sheep following a shepherd and going through this frightening valley, he says, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. If you think about from the sheep's point of view, what would he wouldn't be like looking at the shepherd in the face. He wouldn't be making eye contact necessarily with the shepherd. But what he would see on the ground and what he would interact with would be the shepherd's rod and staff. That's the representation of the shepherd in his life, I guess. So he would see the rod, he would see the staff, and that's kind of what he sees that is the evidence of the shepherd's presence with him. And so perhaps David is implying there that even though we don't look at the Lord face to face, we see his evidence in our life. We see his, we have his word. We have his evidence of his care for us, his promises, his rules, his judgments, his righteousness. These things are what we have in our life that we see that is sort of like the rod from the shepherd, from the master, from the one that we are following. And that was his point of view, and that's what gave him this comfort. Now the scene changes again for the last two verses, and I think really the whole metaphor seems to change. He says, you prepare a table for me before me in the presence of my enemies. I read, I believe, a commentary that actually suggested that some shepherds might feed their sheep on little tables, but I really don't think this is talking about preparing a table for sheep. I think probably now it's sort of like the metaphor is changing. It seems to me that now it's more of a picture of a banquet table, and that the Lord is preparing this table for David in the presence of his enemies. A very fascinating picture to ponder and just think about. You prepare a table before me. Well, first of all, who prepares a table? Who would normally prepare a table? Wouldn't that, normally the servants would prepare the table for the master. You would do this as showing hospitality or servitude to prepare the table, to get things ready, to set things out. And it seems to be a little bit backwards that the Lord, the shepherd, the master, God, is preparing a table for David. And yet, Jesus uses this same kind of upside-down imagery in a very interesting parable in Luke chapter 12. Where Jesus says, stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning and be like men who are waiting for the master to come home from the wedding feast so they may open the door to him at once when he comes and knocks. Blessed are those servants whom the master finds awake when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will dress himself for service, have them recline at table, and he will come and serve them. That's an amazing picture that Jesus is saying there. And he's telling us something about God, isn't he? You be watchful. You pay attention. And you stay ready. And when the master comes back, he's going to have you sit at the table and he's going to serve you. You would think, that's upside down. Why would the master serve his servants? Well, why would our Creator put a towel around his waist and wash people's feet? Why would God? That's the kind of God we serve, who loves us and prepares a table for us, who blesses us. And are we worthy of any of that? We are not worthy of that. Just like Peter, who would say, Lord, this is wrong. You can't wash me. Peter understood this isn't the way this is supposed to go. But that's who Jesus was. And that's who our, and of course Jesus was teaching them to try to be, emulate that. You go be the same, you know, don't try to be on top of everybody, try to serve other people. But that's the kind of God we serve. And David had this relationship with God, and he said, you prepare a table for me. And not only does he say, you prepare a table for me, but he says, you prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. Now that's an interesting picture too. I don't know how you imagine the way all this has played out, but it seems to me that we're out of the valley of the shadow of death now. This is like a new scene. And yet, the enemies are still out there. And so, I found a picture of a table outdoors. This whole psalm seems outdoors to me. I don't picture it really in a house, but I don't know what David had in mind particularly. But it seems like clearly, the Lord, the shepherd, is setting a table for David. And somewhere around are some enemies. They're there. Maybe in the shadows, maybe in the woods. They're watching. But do you get the sense when you read that David is worried at all about those guys? With God setting the table for you, with the Lord preparing the table for you, who cares what the enemies are up to, right? What difference does it make? Yeah, they're out there, but I'm not worried about them. God's serving me dinner. God's he's blessing me, and he's giving me blessings and good things, and so what? There's enemies out there. I'm not worried about those guys. Because the Lord has prepared a table for me, and even right there in front of them, showing, of course, that the Lord has favored David. And he goes on to say, you anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. The anointing may have something to do with David's special anointing as king, but I think in general it just refers to the blessings of God, just like the overflowing cup. You know, they say that pessimists see the glass half empty and an optimist half full. Engineers, they say, would say it's twice as big as it needs to be and there's cost savings there somewhere. But the Christian sees the glass as overflowing, right? The child of God sees his glass as overflowing. I've been blessed beyond measure. I've been blessed with more than I deserve and more than I could ever need. And then he goes on to say, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I couldn't think of a picture that would kind of illustrate that. But David's trust in the Lord here to provide for him and bless him. The first half of the thing is leading him and guiding him, leading him beside the still waters, the green pastures, through the valley of the shadow of death. But he knows where this is going to end up ultimately if he keeps following the shepherd. He's ultimately going to end up at home with the Lord forever. And that's also fascinating because one of the questions about, it'll come to you eventually in as you read the Old Testament, is what was their understanding of heaven and hell? What do they think about the afterlife? What do they know about judgment and resurrection and all those kinds of things? And we have all that revealed clearly. The curtain's pulled back on that in the New Testament. I believe that's by God's design, that life and immortality come to light through the gospel. We have a much clearer understanding of all that, I believe, than the people of old did. But I know this. David expected, and through faith saw, that he expected to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I don't know what all he knew about that, but he knew that was what he was looking forward to. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's a beautiful, wonderful thought. So it's no doubt as you read through this, you can see why it has become so beloved and so comforting to so many through the years. So let's make some applications and kind of other connections. One thing that was, if you would turn to Mark chapter 6, one thing that was brought to me just this past weekend, we had a meeting at South Fayetteville. We had a weekend meeting last weekend, and Nathan Ward, I was about to forget his name, Nathan Ward came up from Tampa and spoke to us through the, and he mentioned something, and it was like one of those little connections that I had never put together, and it was about this passage in our psalm. So, in our psalm, he says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. And if you look around, if you try to think about where else in the Bible is there some green pastures. Where else is there green grass? Only one place. I searched on my computer to be sure. Only one other place. You got green pastures and you got green grass. They each show up in one verse. Here's the other verse. It's in Mark chapter 6. But notice the context. Verse 34. When he went ashore and he saw a great crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. All right? So it's part of the picture here. They're like, he sees these people, and what they need is a shepherd. So, of course, you know that he teaches them, and the day comes to an end, and the disciples are like, you got to send them home. These folks got to get something to eat. He says, you give them something to eat. And they say something about, you know, where are we going to find all this food? How in the world can we feed all these people? Verse 39, oh, yeah, after they come up with the five loaves and two fish. In verse 39, it says, then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. Isn't that neat? He makes me lie down in green pastures. Now, I don't know for absolute certain that Mark is trying to get us to see the connection here. But not only that, what else does he do? He prepares a banquet for them. He feeds them a big meal. So much so that by the end of it, they've got baskets full of leftovers. So he sees the people that are like sheep without a shepherd. He leads them. He makes them lie down or sit down in green grass, and then he prepares a meal for them. I had never made that connection between that and Psalm 23, but it is striking when you notice how it all kind of lines up there. But a much more direct connection, explicit connection, is made by Jesus himself in John 10, of course, when he says that he is the good shepherd. So we don't have to wonder about this one. Jesus says, he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he's brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. David knew this voice. David would say, I know that shepherd. David followed him. That's what he's read, right? That's what he talks about. That's what he's saying. Hey, I know the shepherd. And the shepherd knew him. The beautiful thing is we can all have that same relationship. Everybody here, the shepherd wants that relationship with each of us. It goes both ways. It says he knows them by name. The Lord knows his own. He calls them by name. And that's an interesting thing, too, that apparently the shepherds would name all their sheep. And whether they all do that or not, I don't know, but the good shepherd does. It's not like, hey, you. That's probably what I would have to do. He knows them all, and he knows every individually. Again, you know, David talks about this personal relationship, and this is personal because it's by name. So it's saying individually, the shepherd knows each one of his sheep, and the sheep know him, and they know his voice. And notice the way that he leads them. You know, David says, he leads me. Well, he says he goes out, and they follow him, which, again, is not the idea of the cowboy cracking the whip and driving, but it's the shepherd's going that way, and he says, I'm going this way, and everybody that knows his voice goes that way because they're going to follow him because they have that relationship with him. Wherever he goes, they're following. He doesn't have to make them. In fact, he's not going to make them. He isn't going to drive them and whip them. He's just going to go that way, and if you're one of his, you're going to go with him. And that's the call for you and me. If you want to be where he, if you want to follow the shepherd, he's going to call you. Jesus calls us, and he's going that way. And if you hear his voice, you got to follow him. And nobody can make that commitment for you. You have to choose that. I have to choose that. We have to say, I'm going to go where he goes. Now, how do we follow him? It says they know his voice. And so how would I know his voice today? How would I know it if I heard it? Thankfully, it's recorded for me. It's like we have a recording of it. We can listen to this recording, and we can hear what his voice sounds like by reading it and knowing what he says. So when we hear his voice, we hear him speaking to us through his word, if we're one of his, we're going to recognize his voice, and we're going to say, I'm going to follow that. I'm going to go where he leads me. I'm going to do what he says. I'm going to trust in him. I'm okay with being a sheep because I know the shepherd. And that's the only way that at the end of it all, we can say, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. If the shepherd left going that way, and I'm going to stay right here or I'm going that way, there's no way I'm going to end up where he's at when he gets where he's going. But if I choose to follow him and trust him with my life and trust him when the going gets tough, trust him when it's the valley of the shadow of death, trust him when the enemies are about, then I'm going to end up where he's going, and I can share in the same confidence that I can say and you can say, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Perhaps there's someone here this very evening who has never given your life to the Lord. I suspect most everybody here has, but it may be that you have not. The shepherd is calling. The question that is on each of us is to decide, am I going to be one of his sheep or not? He knows better than you do how to lead you, how to direct your steps. He wants you to follow him. He wants you have wandered away and you've been lost, but he will forgive you. You can come back to him. You can be part of his flock. And we do that when we respond in faith to his message. And that includes saying, I believe that. I've sinned. I'm ready to change. I want to follow him. I haven't been, but I'm ready to, and I want to start tonight. What about your sins? You can have those washed away because he died on the cross. And we do that through baptism. And then you lead your life doing your best to follow him. And when you fall, you get back in line and you get back on the right path. And then we can say, I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. If we can help anyone here do that tonight, we would certainly be thrilled to do so if you'll let us know as we stand and sing.